You are listening to Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Welcome back to Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford here on ESPN Cleveland 850 WKNR. Matt Wilhelm, Andrew Gribble, Jason Gibbs here with you today. You can reach us all show long at 216-578-0850 or tweet at the show at Browns underscore daily. We're going to go to the phones. Let's hear from Hiram in Cleveland.
Hey, guys.
Good, man. How are you?
Hey, fine. Yourself?
Great.
I wanted to answer your question. I got one player, and if I can, I got two coaches that
sure,
I
go ahead.
My own. One is Barkevious Mingo. I was impressed with what I saw from him last year, considering that he only had one arm.
Yep.
Looking forward to him. We need his speed off the edge, getting to that passer. We need that because he's the unique individual that has that. With Paul Kruger on the other side, he can give you that speed off the edge to get to the quarterback, and his versatility in coverage is very good too. My second guy, I'm going to be watching Jim O'Neill. Is he astute enough and creative enough? Because I think this defense can be as good as any defense in the NFL. Is he astute enough and creative enough to be able to go from a 4-3 to a 3-4 and so forth and so on, many different defenses that I see other teams like Bill Belichick and other teams do with their defensive personnel? Because I feel that he has it. I think that this defensive personnel is that good. And
I do too. I do too. I agree.
My third is Mike Pettine. Is he open-minded enough? Because, and let me tell you this, on all the Johnny stuff last year and this, and this is somebody who doesn't believe the quarterback is the end-all, be-all. After all the Johnny stuff, is he open-minded? If there's a tie like it was last year, is he open-minded enough to say, you know what, in case of a tie, it's going to go to the younger, more talented ball player, unlike what he did last year?
Okay. Hiram, thank you very much for the call.
I'll jump on the Jim O'Neill thing. He has mentioned – specifically that there's going to be more four-man fronts this season because of what kind of personnel that the Browns bring on that defensive line. And we saw a lot of those looks at OTAs, and I imagine we're going to be seeing a little bit more. So I think this defense has the capability to be more multiple. You have the same coaches, a lot of the same players. So I do think that we're going to see a lot more of these advanced looks
from
Jim O'Neill.
And that's the evolution of the National Football League. Yeah. Everyone knows it is now a passing league, you know, a quarterback-driven league, and you can't have a base defense or your base unit out there, you know, with, you know, Danny Shelton or Phil Taylor there in the middle, you know, locking down the run when a team's got a 60% chance they're going to throw the ball. You're going to bring in your hybrid guy, your John Hughes guy who can play the run well, also rush the passer. Maybe Danny Shelton in the right situations. You know, Xavier Cooper with his great get-off, Randy Starks, who's played both his whole career. But that's the evolution of the National Football League. And I know from my time with Dom Capers there in Green Bay, and a lot of the reason why A.J. Hawk, you know, being paid very well, left Green Bay and was released is because they're paying him, and the only package that he was playing in is base defense. And they're in base defense less than 10 plays a game. They're in some type of sub-package, nickel, dime, you know, or, you know, a Viper package where it's, you know, like a customized package. And I do believe we're going to see a lot of that. And having those four bodies on the defensive line is going to allow us to really dig into that depth that we do have in the defensive line room and find who plays best where and what combination works best within those packages.
Yeah, and kind of going on his point about Mingo, too. That's clearly on any list, if you have five players to watch at Browns training camp, he's got to be one of them because – we didn't get to see much of him out at OTAs, and then kind of getting the comments we heard from Jim O'Neill and other coaches saying, you know, no one's job is locked in place. No one is just kind of given something. And, you know, this is his time to kind of solidify his spot where he thinks it should be and kind of establish himself on this defense as more than the best coverage linebacker that this team has. You can't just rely on Paul Kruger for your sack totals at outside linebacker. So if you can get the Barkevious Mingo you hoped you were getting when you drafted him a few years ago, clearly it was a different regime, though, a different defense and everything like that. But now the comfort level should be there, and more importantly, the health should be there as well.
What I would love to see and this is out there. I would love to see between 25 and 30 sacks from the outside linebackers on this football team.
That would be a big jump.
That'd be a huge jump.
Yeah, I'd have to go back and look and see what they had last year.
You would hope. Well, Paul Kruger, 11.5. Mm. Mingo had a couple. Solomon didn't have any. Jabal Sheard had, what, 3-4 maybe?
I think, did Solomon end up getting a sack last year?
Did he have one?
He might have had. I'm looking right now.
That's fine. We'll catch up to it. But I just know from the success that I had seen firsthand playing in a 3-4 defense out there in San Diego, and blessed to have, you know, Sean Merriman on one side. And in that situation, Sean Merriman, Paul Kruger, very similar situations where they're rushing 95% of the time because they're that good at rushing the passer, and they're just not that good dropping. Where when we were at our best, he was a 13 to 15 sack guy. And on the other side, you had Sean Phillips, who reaped the benefit of that guy on the other side, Sean Merriman, Paul Kruger in this situation, being so good and getting so much attention that he was in a one-on-one situation. This is the Mingo side. This is the Nate Orchard side. This is the, you know, Scott Solomon side, that they can win that one-on-one battle more often than not because of how they're blocking and protecting their passer. And he went for 10.5, 11.5, 12 sacks. So how great would it be to have 23 out of two guys and, you know, a sprinkling of 2 to 4 without the other guys? That's what gives me that number of 25 to 30 sacks, because it's possible with what Jim O'Neill has spoke about in this graduate level of defense, because the back end's going to be locked down. The inside linebackers are both good at pass rushing and great in coverage. You know, Dansby, Robertson, Kirksey probably being the best out of the three, I wouldn't think. And then that allows the outside linebackers to just go do their job and rush the passer. That's why you draft a guy like Nate Orchard.
Yeah, just looking at the numbers from last year, Kruger had 11.
11, okay.
But the team as a whole only had 31.
Yeah.
Which is a total. It ranked 27th in the NFL.
Right. They need to be up plus 40 plus.
Solomon had one. Mingo had two.
So it's 14.
Yeah, and then there's really that.
Sheard have any?
Sheard had two.
Oh, so 16.
Yeah.
16 out of that room. Okay, so we need 10 more sacks out of that room with the four guys that we have on the roster right now. I think it's possible.
Yeah, I think that's a goal you would certainly set.
They should have something like that. Gibbs, I know Twitter's been blowing up. What do you got from the tweets?
Yeah, we'll get you a couple here and get your reaction. Ted Rosenau tweets at the show, at Browns_daily. What three players need to show up? He says Gilbert, Gilbert, and Gilbert. Clearly a man that the microscope will definitely be on.
On him, and I just want to throw this out there, and my response to him is, why?
Yeah.
And the reason why I say that is because he may not play, just like Johnny may not play, being the number two behind Josh McCown. Justin Gilbert may not be on the field, and I know – everyone
through no fault of his own.
Through
honestly,
no fault of his own. Well, a little fault
little
of his
bit,
own
yeah.
from, you know, from his, you know, inadequacies as a rookie. But in this situation, there's just superior talent playing ahead of him. There's nowhere for him to fit in. And in some cases, if you were to go four defensive backs, he might not be your fourth if you're in love with a guy like Pierre Desir.
Yeah, I mean, that's why I would have a heart. It would be great if he had a bounce back year.
I would love it.
And if he found his way on the field, even in a situational role, that means he's playing at a level where he's beating
earning
out other
it.
Guys, earning his way onto the field. But, you know, I think the way the Browns secondary is now, you feel good about it. And that's why you might not need that kind of career type of season. Maybe down the road, maybe year three could be a big year for him. I mean, looking toward the future. But right now with a guy like Tremont Williams, who – for the first time in a long time, is going to be guarding the number two wide receiver in a secondary where they really also like Pierre Desir. You've got Kwan Williams basically just locked into that nickel cornerback role.
Yep.
That's why it would be great to have, but something you probably don't need in 2015.
I totally disagree.
Okay.
I'm not putting Gilbert in my top three,
right?
But you have got to get something from your number one picks last year. And he has got to make an impact some way. I'm not saying maybe on the defensive side, then put him on special teams. Put him at punt returner or kick returner,
gunner
or whatever.
Or something, yeah.
Yeah. I've got to see something from this guy. He was a top 10 pick a year ago. He's got to do something for this team to take that next step, in my opinion.
Again, if he can win that punt returner role, that would be huge for him.
I think it
would be huge for this team.
Yeah, I mean, because he clearly, when he got the ball in his hands with that interception return last year, he's pretty good with it.
Yeah,
I mean, he can move.
And this, but Gibbs, to sort of disagree with you and continue, like, where I'm coming from is the cornerback room is probably the only room on this roster that is so talented and so deep that I don't hate the fact that I can't get my sixth overall pick or eighth overall pick on the football field. Because the guys above him are so experienced, so good, so position specific and honed in that it's the only, which in turn might go back to question why we drafted him as a cornerback in the first place.
That's my whole thing. Like, if you draft someone in the top 10, you're drafting them to become an impact player for your team. And it, maybe not in the first year, but by the second year, I better start seeing something.
But you, Mark, we've already spoken about Barkevious Mingo, and he's in the same situation. Sixth overall pick, and
yep.
You're not seeing a whole lot of him either. But he's grading out very well, which is what they're selling.
And he played with one arm. So right. Show me what you can do with two. Because I think he gutted it out last year, and we don't talk a lot about that. We focus on the negatives, but I thought he played pretty well last year, all things considered. Now he's got to step up and have that big year for this football team.
Agree. You want to hit another tweet or grab a break here?
No, we can do another tweet here. They're coming in fast and furious. RJ Pace tweets at the show. He says, Phil Taylor, McCown, and Bo.
I like that.
I mean, that's...
And we're now, talking career season for Dwayne Bowe would be pretty impressive considering the types of numbers he's put up
right.
in previous years. That might be a reach to hope to have.
It would.
I mean, I think if Dwayne Bowe got in the end zone five times, you'd do cartwheels considering he didn't get in the end zone at all last year
right.
in Kansas City.
Now, Andrew, I want to ask you this question and maybe you can shine a light on it if you know it. Listening to the Really Big Show... driving around this morning, they had Tony Grossi on, and there was a question about Phil Taylor. Is Phil Taylor's salary for this upcoming season guaranteed?
I don't know. I couldn't get into specifics of that. I could try to find out, but I don't know
because
exactly how
there,
that
And
works.
The reason why I ask is because Gerard Cherry posed a question earlier today to Tony Grossi about Phil Taylor, you know, being kind of like a contract casualty. Guy's got a big number, you know, up around $5 million or $5 million plus. The Browns picked up his – Tony Grossi said when the Browns picked up his fifth-year option, that salary becomes immediately guaranteed. So the fact that him – you cut him, you eat that $5 million by still paying him, or you keep him and pay him the $5 million he's due. Yeah. So that is a key factor because I know, for me, I thought Phil was on the bubble, you know, of being a cap casualty because as deep and competitive – as that defensive line room is now going to be.
Yeah, I think with him, though, it's if you can get him healthy, he can help you so much on that defensive line.
But
you
made your point with a big if in it. If he can get healthy, and that's always been his problem.
Yeah.
Because when he's good, he's productive.
That's why I said, if you get him healthy, too, that nose position becomes very strong.
It really does.
For the Browns. Because the team likes what Ishmaele Kitchen has done at that position as well. I mean, kind of a... under the radar guys it gets, but you know, he's been solid for the team. And that's why,
but there's only so many spots. You can't keep 12
right.
defensive
and
linemen.
And I was looking back when I was doing the position previews, like I was like, man, they only kept like seven last year.
Yeah.
Like, and I look at the group this year, I'm like, they can't keep less than eight.
Right.
Like, I know I was looking at, I was like, they're going to have to make cuts somewhere else. I mean, this 53 man roster makes it tough.
It does. And that's why immediately after the draft, when Nathan would be over here doing a show, you know, and we were running an interview or of some sort that was recorded, I'm over there trying to go position by position, 1 to 53. I would say cornerback with, you know, with it as heavy and talented as we are there, defensive line and are probably the two positions in offensive line because of what happened last year with Alex Mack and being, you know, so thin on talent. We've now eradicated that with drafting Cameron Irving. Are there probably the three positions that you can be heavy for this Browns roster?
D-line, you wouldn't think wide receiver?
I think six is going to be it.
And that's counting a guy like a Marlon Moore who's on special teams? Are you kind of putting him in a different category?
They're a different category.
Oh, okay.
Or that guy might not make the team. Because the point that I made with, I think even yesterday or maybe earlier in the week with Jim Donovan, is the best teams in the National Football League have their starters participating on special teams and or their backups. Their backups are backups on offense, but special, they learn to be special teams aces, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
You know, instead of getting down into our fourth and fifth stringers, our special teams aces, but not participating in a position. Like, are we going to have Marlon Moore actively out there trying to extend a drive on third down versus the Steelers in week 17?
Right.
Probably not, unless we're out of the playoffs completely, you know. But we want him to – so my whole point is there, we need guys to focus on the positions that win you football games. And as it sits right now, that's offense and defense, stopping someone from scoring and scoring points. And we need to get those guys in line first and then use the accessories to the best of our ability to make a football team and be really good on special teams. But when you get the players on that offensive defensive side of the ball gung-ho about special teams, which is difficult to do, and I think a lot of the reason why Coach Tabor has been retained by multiple staffs as the hiring and firing here in Cleveland has come and gone, he does that as good as anybody.
Yeah, so that would mean a guy like a Vince Maley. You'd hope he comes in and is gangbusters on special teams, because he might be the team's like fifth wide receiver, but you want him just ready to go at all those positions and be very good at it.
Yeah.
So that's the big transition, because you don't think – I don't know exactly, but I imagine he wasn't doing a ton of special teams at Washington State.
And Vince Maley's a unique situation because the wide receiver position is unique. Very rarely you'll see one of them play a gunner. Where I'm kind of focusing is – Pierre Desir, who might be that fourth corner, Justin Gilbert, who could possibly be that fourth corner, we talked about, you know, stepping up in his role, needs to become a Marlon Moore type of special teams player or a Johnson Batamose type of special teams player while also being that fourth corner and making this roster. Because when you do that, you're accumulating talent, accumulating talent, accumulating talent, and you're all in it to win it instead of, I'm just a special teams player, but I'm also just carrying the defensive back tag along my name. So that's really what it's what makes all the great teams in the National Football League successful.
Yeah.
So, yeah, we're going to take a break here, and when we come back, we're going to hear from a Browns defensive line coach, Anthony Weaver, talking about Danny Shelton, the addition of Randy Starks, Xavier Cooper, and the expectations that he has for this group. And this was recorded earlier in the offseason. Matt Wilhelm, Jason Gibbs, Andrew Gribble with you here today on Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford. What keeps the planet spinning?